Hello and welcome to the Conscious Consulting Podcast, where we will introduce you to the Conscious Consulting philosophy. Together with our senior advisors from all around the world, we blend the deep knowing of wisdom traditions, technology, modern science, and business, and show you how to transform this wisdom into impact in your daily life as a consultant, leader, or entrepreneur. Welcome to the CCG community. Today we want to introduce you to our remarkable senior advisor, Dr. Ernest C.H. Ng, and his exceptional life path. In his early career, Ernest was one of the top performers in the financial markets, where he also functioned as the vice president of Morgan Stanley Asia. After 15 years in the financial industry, Ernest went back to university part-time to study and research Buddhist philosophy and Buddhist economics. His book, Introduction to Buddhist Economics, serves as a pioneering effort to introduce Buddhist economics systemically. Today, Ernest is a Buddhist scholar, teacher, as well as the chief executive officer of an 80-year-old Buddhist NGO. In our podcast conversation, Ernest tells how his interest in Buddhist economics arose and how he combined classical economics with Buddhist values, why he gave up his career in the financial industry, how companies can do good and well, and what his vision for the future of business looks like. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this wonderful conversation on the Conscious Consulting Podcast. Ernest, thank you so much for taking the time to come to the Conscious Consulting Podcast. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me. Thanks, Lisa. It's good to have you as well.
Yeah, I told you before in our introduction talk that I was so inspired reading your story. And it's such a, at one point, it almost sounds like a movie with a lot of plot twists in it and very fascinating. So you have this inspiring career. You were this high achiever and top performer in the financial markets. And then on the other side, you're also this pioneer in the fields of Buddhist economics and also an advocate for purposeful leadership. So before we dive into how you integrated those two fields and areas, just take us through your career journey. So what have you done and why have you done it?
Lisa, you're too kind. I think I should hire you as my marketer. I think things on bios are always more glamorous or more straightforward as it seems to be. But I think you did highlight there are so many different, I would say, interesting and rewarding twists and turns. I have been like a very typical like Hong Kong kids. When I was young, the path is very straightforward in a sense that we want to go to a good school and then you find a good internship. A good internship lead to a good career. And then I think back then, a career in finance seems to be very straightforward. If you could have the opportunity, it has good payoff, has good exposure, you learn a lot. And then you haven't really think too much about what you want in your life. I would say I always be very thankful for an opportunity when I was in high school. I got to meet with my high school senior who somehow introduced me to a Zen master. So he took me to a field trip to a monastery when I was young. And that was the connections I have with my spirituality or my kind of value system. But I have to admit that I was basically on that very typical track, study, career, find a good job, and then like focus on my job for quite a long period of time. It wasn't until more or less like 5-7 years of my career. Then I realized, oh, actually, there's something missing. As probably you would expect, a career in finance is really intense. It's kind of like trying to spend two individual time work hours into one day. So every day is like 2 days and every week is like 2 weeks, right? So it really demands so much from you physically and mentally. But at the same time, you squeeze so much time from you so that you don't really have the opportunity to think about what you want. It's kind of like in a track mule. So you just keep running and doing next. I think that connections that I had when I was in high school give me the opportunity to reflect when I get a chance. So I still kind of find it hard to explain why, there was a kind of a coincidence that I suddenly kind of come back and connect with my value system 5-7 years after I work. And I began my journey, I would say, this kind of dual path journey. I began to study part-time. I studied part-time for my master in Buddhist studies. And then after a two-year part-time program, I continued my part-time in PhD. That kind of gave me an avenue to my research, academic, and my, I would say, kind of spiritual development as well. I think that is also kind of a personal development. I would say, interestingly, when I give more room to something else, then the conditions and also the opportunities in things other than finance arise. I think, first of all, I switched my career path from the very, very busy corporate finance to asset management. That gave me a little bit of breathing space. And then after I came back from Singapore, I was in Singapore for 2.5 years with a hedge fund. So I came back from Singapore, I start my own boutique. So the blessing in disguise is actually I have more personal time. I can allocate my time a lot better. So I did my PhD part-time, and also at the same time, like, spent a lot more time exploring the subject, as you have mentioned, the subjects of how we can make sense of my work, which is like very finance, like very fast moving, maximizing in a sense, like very money driven. And then like my value system, which is very, I would say very value driven, very spiritual, so to speak. And also a lot more focus on relationship. So maybe I should stop there. But I would say this kind of journey is very interesting in a way that I find it amazing in a way that if you allow the opportunity to arise, then you can actually see something very, very different.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's actually, your story is really relatable, because I think many people have some encounter with some, I don't know, spirituality or religion, some wisdom, something that the interest gets sparked, but then they continue their life path. And sometimes, as you all also mentioned, sometimes your life path is so determined already. Like, you go from high school, then you go to study, and then you have like this career in mind, and then you follow it, and then you gave it space, and then someday it comes back, your interest or something that maybe you don't know what you want, but at least you say, something is missing and I don't want this anymore. So I can really relate to that. I think it's really interesting.
I think while I'm kind of having a lot of inquiries or kind of reflections about my own personal journey, at the same time, I also start to think about like what all these means, right? It's not that like econ and finance are not important, but like, how can we make sense of this, particularly in the context of our different kind of faith or religious or value systems. Some people would say like maybe your religious or your spiritual inclinations is completely opposite of the market philosophy, the greed, or the kind of maximizations, right? If you really devoted to your personal development, does it mean that you have to give up everything? Do you have to give up your secular achievements and the kind of career that you have, right? Do you have to be very poor? Do you have to give up everything in order to be spiritual, right? So these are questions that I have for myself as well. And because of these questions, and I would say these kind of contradictions, I find the studies and my research very important. And that's why I devote quite a lot of time doing it part-time as well.
Very interesting. So you said when you had more time for yourself, more time for thinking and feeling, you realized that something was missing. in your career, in your life? Did you know what it was back then?
I don't think I know exactly what it was, but in a way that I think very often, I think people may also would share the same feeling, is like we're constantly in a chase. I think, of course, initially a lot of us like have very basic and kind of minimum financial needs. I came from a very humble background, in a sense that I want to make a good living for myself and my family. I think that is very straightforward. I think it's kind of like a cliche or kind of like an old story, but I think for me, initially the kind of inclination is, oh, actually, like, given the opportunity I have, the good educations I have, I want to kind of give back to my family, right? So that's this kind of a very direct response to my initial career path, and the job I have seems to make good money, and also I learn a lot, I enjoy it. It's very like you get to work with a lot of smart people, so it's a great career, and very well respected. But I think after a while, the question is, what exactly I want in a way that, do I see myself 10 or 20 years after still find the same interests or the kind of the inspirations from the career? Do I still want to devote 18 hours or 20 hours of my day into my work? Not that I don't enjoy my work, but like, is it consistent with what I believe in? Like, is it consistent with something that I really treasure, that I would enjoy doing, like, even if it's called quote-unquote work? So I think these are the questions I have. And I think another part of it is to think about whether the work itself is consistent with my value systems, whether it would allow, apart from the materialistic kind of the material growth, like, does it allow my kind of personal development as well? So I think initially the skill part, personal development, is definitely related. It's definitely contributing to my personal development in that sense. But I think after a while, when you're very good at your work, you kind of know every kind of key professional skills you need to develop, then what next, right? Like, what really still excites you, or what really still inspire you in your career? I think that was what I was thinking about back then.
Yeah, it's very important to know and to realize and to reflect also in your career time. Yeah. And why did you choose to go part-time and study Buddhist studies? So why Buddhist economics and why Buddhist studies?
I think that's a very good question. I think, first of all, I think the decisions about going part-time is, I always have these kind of tactics, I would say, kind of in a sense that you build the connections or build the conditions, but not trying to go all in at once. Like, in a sense that I think sometimes, like, if you say studying Buddhism or doing this research is my dream, or this is like my ideals, right? I think sometimes the pitfall is to go all in into something that you feel like that you want, but you may not be very comfortable with, or you may not actually have all the conditions. For example, I want to do research. I find this topic very interesting, but I may be like a really bad academics. And of course, I think one of the reasons why I want to learn Buddhist studies kind of formally in a way is I want to communicate the philosophy, the teaching in a very systematic way, and particularly also in English, so that I can communicate with people outside Hong Kong or with a different language, like what the interesting and the inspiring philosophy or value systems Buddhism has. If I don't take the classes and don't study the degree, I don't think I would be able to do it. But I think the motivation back then is I really want to teach Buddhism. And I think having the kind of a formal doctoral qualifications would facilitate that. And then also, I find it's the subject really exciting. So there were some pioneering research in the 70s, but those research were more relatable to the economic system back then. I think the economic system actually have evolved a lot over the last few decades, particularly what we are seeing in terms of the market economy, not to mention the fintech, the cryptocurrency that we are seeing nowadays. So I want to have an update version of Buddhist economics in the context of market economy, in the context of capitalistic society, and really try to figure out like what is actually the relevance of these traditional wisdoms to the market behavior. Not that we want to make more money out of the Buddhist values or the traditional wisdom, but can we make sense of the current market behavior, or can we, in a sense, to find the perspectives of these from these traditional wisdoms, how we should improve or modify our existing economy if there are some shortfall or if there's there are area that you could actually do better. So I think that was the motivation. I think one edge that I also have is because I come from a professional background. So I in a sense, can serve as a translator and also sometimes to find good example so that they, I think people trying to learn new perspectives from a traditional wisdoms or from some like different school of thoughts, but you need to have the right language or they need to find it is actually relevant to the professional experience. I think that is also another area I find that I could contribute. Like because a lot of people doing the research in the field, they came from an academic background. Their perspectives may be a lot more technical or a lot more intellectual. I think whereas like from my experience, because I understand how the market work, I've been spending quite a bit of time in the market, I can relate to the experience, the personal experience of those traders, the investors, asset management professionals, and see how they could benefit from these discussions.
Yeah, so you really have to understand those two worlds to fully teach and help and contribute. So it doesn't make a lot of sense that to bring wisdom into a field you don't know anything about. So I think that's also a struggle for a lot of people, always this spiritual wisdom that it is somewhere up in the monastery, somewhere up in the woods, but people can't really relate into the daily work and daily life to it. So we need those translators like you to do it. And so coming from this financial classical economics and this highly stressful environment, but also living those Buddhist values and being a teacher for Buddhist economics. So what is your vision for the ideal business world or economy? How do you imagine it?
Wow, that's a big question. That's a big question. I think in a sense, not that I haven't really think about it, but I haven't really think about it in this kind of context. I think in a sense, like what is the ideal or what is actually the world we are envisioning from the Buddhist economic context? I mean that is actually very profound. I think in a way that like I can explain to you like all the key characteristics of Buddhist economics. Like in a sense that we should think about the relationship we have with individuals, with society and the environment. Buddhist economics, of course, is a lot more relational than transactional. It's not meant to be instrumental. It cultivates genuine care. So we take each stakeholders as individual, as humans, as another species that coexists in the planet. There are a lot more focus on the values instead of price, in a sense that like, the values has a lot more intangible implications and a lot more consequence instead of just quantitative, quote-unquote, rational calculations that sometimes really oversimplify the consequence of our actions. So the morality, the value system is very important. And then I also would highlight the integration in a sense that very often in the economic, the modern capitalistic society, we somehow compartmentalize our lives. Like, this is my work life, this is my personal lives, this is like my value system at work, and this is like another kind of benevolent or very charitable characters that I have on my personal context. This is like how I deal with my family, this is how I deal with other people's family. The Buddhist economic discussions would definitely be a lot more integrated, a lot more integral, in a sense that like you can't compartmentalize these different kind of experiences you have, because ultimately it's kind of like a feedback loops. Like the way I'm interacting with you right now would have an impact to how my psychophysiological behavior would cultivate over time, right? So every kind of interactions that you have, every decision that you make, it is all important. So in a way that, like, if I envision the kind of the ideal world inspired by Buddhist economics, so it definitely should have these ingredients. And of course, I think what make the Buddhist economics Buddhist in a sense, apart from the values, the morality that we talk about, is also the wisdoms. In a way that trying to understand the dependent arising, is kind of like technical, but in a sense, how relational, how interrelational our interaction is, how inseparable that we are, and also with our society and also with the environment. I think once you have that insight, that how things are interrelated, interdependent, you will see your interactions with the world and also with yourself completely different. So I think the gist of it is, you would find a world where the material needs, of course, is important. We never kind of deny the need of basic essential material needs. We need clothing, we need food, we need education, nourishment, medicines, shelter. But while we are going beyond and trying to satisfy a lot more that we need, we may do it at the expense of other people who really need it, and other living species who may be sacrificed or maybe affected at the expense of our consumptions. So that kind of optimization is not easy, but at the same time, it could be achievable if we adjust the way that we think about our economic behavior, like in the process of consumptions and productions, in the process of investment, and the way how we spend money as well.
Yeah, sounds wonderful. Yeah, and we need role models in that show us that it's possible. Yeah.
That's, I think, is also the challenging part. I think one thing that I discuss with my students, and I think when I'm interacting with others, I think the challenges is you can find role model who could have good executions and achieve certain parts of the ideals of Buddhist economics. But I think it is a path that we can aspire and work toward. It's very hard to say, oh, like you perfect the Buddhist economics ideals, like in a way that there are so many different kind of trade-offs we have to think about in this imperfect world. Like, I think one example that we can give is like we may save a lot more carbon footprint, but at the same time, the pollution coming from EV, from the battery, like would be another kind of toll on the environment as well. I think that the very fact that we are living in an imperfect world means that like we need to make a lot of tough decisions. We try to get ourselves informed. We try to make ourselves smarter in the process, but it may not be perfect. But I think the journey is definitely worthwhile. The journey of becoming more conscious in the decision we make, the journey of trying to do better, and trying to put an effort in the journey, in the process. I think that is very, very important.
Yeah, absolutely. So how do you see the role of consulting and consultants in that?
I think consultant is like a guide, like in a sense, or like a teacher. I think the role of consultant, it could share with you the insight, the experience, the kind of the process or the strategy, but a lot of the actual actions have to come from within, like either from an individual, corporate, society perspective. So it has to come from within, right? That transformations also has to come from within. But a good consultant can give an individual and organizations all the necessary tools and insight and inspirations, and also help them basically to work out the path, and give them like all the necessary facilitation so that they can embark up on that journey. I think very often the transformations and the change is difficult because part of it is so hard to visualize like what's going to be next, as you said, like what would be the ideal world, right? Like where would we get to? But I think also another challenge is like, how do we get there? Not to mention, I think another even bigger question is like, why we have to do all these changes? Because you are leading me to something that I have never experienced before. You have these promises, like this will make our corporate more sustainable, will make our each of our individual like more integral, more coherent. But like these are something that they have not experienced before. How can you help them to visualize, facilitate, and guide them through the process will be actually a very important job of a consultant. I think that process is not easy in a way that you need to translate, you need to interpret what you learn, like what you know from what you don't know. But also at the same time, trying to speak the language so that they feel that you really understand them, and then you can really solve the challenge that they have, which is like quite individual. Like it's sometimes it's actually not homogenous.
Yeah, I can imagine. And I think it's so important what you said about that these are decisions that are coming from within. So I think many consultants want to give you like this five-step strategy, and those bullet points you have to check, and then everything is like wonderful and sustainable and perfect. But the reality looks different.
Because sometimes I think particularly from my background, I would think that transformations has so many different level. Like you can talk about transformations in behavior. You can talk about transformations in strategy. Like it's kind of like the thought process level of transformation. But I think most importantly is actually a transformations of like a completely different mindset. Like people have to wake up and think differently somehow. They need to kind of synchronize with various different stakeholders so you can get their buy-in and move forward together. But when you talk about mindset, like a corporate of 100 people could have 200 mindsets. Like sometimes each individual themselves can have various mindsets. So I think that is the challenges. I think that's also the value add for consultant or people who have like our kind of background, who really kind of think deep about how these transformations could take place. Yeah,
absolutely. And it comes back to what you said earlier about transformations. Once you did the transformation and once you saw and begin to see, it's everything changes. So you can't go back anymore.
Yeah, so that's why sometimes when I having these like sharing sessions with the new graduates, and I was share with them that like I'm a slasher as well. Like I slash in a sense. I have different kind of interests and I have different kind of aspirations. I share the same kind of I would say diversification, so to speak, like they are. But I think one key difference is I'm always trying to link the dot, like in a sense that like if the five or four things that I am interested in or I related to are completely different, I think that would be very difficult to eventually to work on or arrive at something coherent. So sometimes I would suggest them to explore different interests that they have, but try to kind of find the connections, try to think about the different links that eventually could contribute to something bigger or something that they wanted to pursue in the long run. I think also that is something that I find very interesting, like when it comes to the Buddhist wisdom talking about interconnections, is that like we have all these different dots that we cultivate throughout our life journey. You don't know how they are linked together. Sometimes people may have like very, very separate and dispersed dot. But I think if we can somewhat link them together, then they will be able to kind of weave and build a very beautiful picture together.
You are in a new leadership role. You are the CEO of a very, how do you say, rich of traditions NGO. It's already 80 years old. That's very incredible. How do you lead purposeful?
I think that is a very great learning experience from my perspectives. The organization is definitely older than I am. So much to learn and I have a lot of respect for the culture and also the predecessor in a way that their visions and also I think how they navigate through history and time. So it's actually a humbling experience. I think another interesting experience that I have is I think when you think about for-profit organization, the visions or missions, they have like a lot other values that they put in, but profit is definitely like one core parameters for a profit organization. But for in terms of a nonprofit organizations, of course, you have a very clear vision and missions and kind of value system. But in a way that the people that you interact with may have very different perspectives or interpretations of the values that we are talking about, or they have very different way to think about how they could be achieved. So in terms of how to work with people with values, I think that is a great experience for me because like values is something even more challenging to understand and to discuss in a way, because I think when you talk about numbers, then I can work out all the math quantitatively. But when it comes to values, it actually takes a lot of skills to communicate and to understand where people are coming from and what they are heading to. And in the process of leading a value-driven or purpose-driven organizations, you also need to figure out like how you communicate and interact with all the different stakeholders and parties involved. I think I borrow a lot from the Buddhist wisdom in a sense that you need to really understand and develop some insight to the interdependence relationship we have with different stakeholders. Try not to think so much about yourself. I think we could dive into a lot deeper discussions on this in a way that I think a lot of leaders think of themselves in the leading role in terms of a lot of leadership, a lot of changes that they want to make. But I think from my perspectives, I really want to integrate myself into the dynamic of the systems, like in a sense that you want to kind of move kind of interact with the system together so that we can all together arrive at some common directions and some common goals together. Does it make sense to you?
Absolutely, absolutely. So you're getting yourself into that organization, not building the organization around yourself.
So. Yeah, because in a sense, sometimes like there are a lot of egos involved. You may think that like you are the one leading the organization, so that you determine like all the direction, strategy, and execution plans. That could be one way to lead. I think particularly in a way that I think in the past, you need to have a very straightforward command and control mechanism in order to lead. But I think nowadays, the leadership style is also changing very rapidly. I think particularly for value-driven organizations, like even my very junior new staff, like they could have very, very interesting and aspiring and also very different value systems. And how to embrace it, and at the same time, we can walk together. I think that is an art, because it's not that their aspirations, their value system is anyhow less than or less important than those in the senior management, right? Like we need to somehow synchronize it so that we can walk together. Either you somehow like influence them and then they buy into the systems or the values or the aspirations we have, or like they have to also feel that they are part of the whole organization.
Yeah, I can very relate to that. And I think also in my generation, like leadership style has changed a lot. And I really like the similarity to consulting and to being a consultant, because like for your employees, you're holding the space to let evolve or to raise the potential of what is there. And a consultant shouldn't do anything different. So I think
another caveat is like where to draw the line. Like sometimes it's really important to tell, okay, that's not how the way it should be done. But also sometimes like, okay, yeah, let's explore it together. I think that is also another challenge, because sometimes they would think that when you draw the line, it may be too restrictive or too parental, so to speak, but sometimes it's actually also necessary. So that is another thing that I learned in the process as well.
Yeah. So I really can imagine that leadership, and I know for myself, building a business, it is a spiritual act and spiritual practice. And it's a wonderful learning journey. So, and I would ask you now a question that I'm asking everyone on the CCG podcast, the last question. So from your point of view, what is the secret to a good life?
Wow. That's a deep question. I would borrow from my 6I model. Like I have this like 6I HIJKI. Yeah. I think in a sense that like a good life should be integral. Like so you don't have these kind of separations of values or of thoughts within you. So you truly integrate it and be integral with what you believe in, like what you treasure, what you value. And then the second eye that I would have is like you see the connections, the interdependence you have with yourself, your family, and rest of the world. Because I think just living a life of individual is a really challenging and tough life. If you connect and interact and integrate it, interconnected with rest of the society ecosystem, it would be fantastic. Like a lot more could be achieved. And then finally, it would be the eye of insight, the eye of wisdoms, because I think that gives us transcendental meanings, aspirations to become something bigger than who we are right now. To be brave enough to do something that we are not courageous to do right now. And of course, like to be wise enough to solve the problem that we cannot deal with right now. So I would say that I would recommend the three eyes or the six eyes of insight, integrations or integral, become integral, and then finally of interdependence.
Very, very good. Thank you so much for your time and your sharing and your wisdom. It was a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much. And we're really lucky to have you as a conscious consultant, and I'm very looking forward to everything that is coming with and from you at the CCG.
Thanks a lot, Lisa. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to this episode of the Conscious Consulting Podcast. If you want to dive deeper into the field of conscious consulting, become a part of our community, visit ccg-group.eu and subscribe to our newsletter so we can stay connected. You will find the link in the show notes. We look forward to having you on board.